This is VSiN by the Books on VSiN, the sports betting network.
We begin hour number three. It is VSiN by the Books. Dave Ross here at Circus Sports Fabulous Las Vegas, Nevada. Our closer, Jensen Lewis, back home in Cleveland, Ohio. Going to have Reed Kuhn join us here from Washington, D.C. to break down UFC 317, the only way Reed can do it, with some of the best numbers out there, analytics style. So that's going to be a great conversation there. Enjoy the one we just had with Mike Palm as well, talking Major League Baseball and beyond with Mike. Very interesting to hear about how some of these things are playing out for Survivor, for millions. So if you're in those contests, we just did get a nice text and tweet out there that said, came out here for Circus Survivor, Jensen. Everything went smooth. It does help, as Mike alluded to, come out early, people, because when you do get closer and closer to the deadline, the lines, you can see the shot behind me here at Circa. If you're watching on the VSiN Watch app, those lines will be very long, and it does take some time to sign up. So I think very good advice from Mike Palm. Come on out here earlier. The earlier, the better. Let's get to it here for hour number three, highlights and headlines. And not a surprise, Jensen, NBA draft took center stage last night. And no, none of us were surprised. Again, we talked about it with Mike. And that's why maybe the betting market, it's not the best betting market for the NBA draft. But did anything change in your mind after what we saw early in round one yesterday?
Nothing changed except, the pomp and circumstance was really not present. I think I was more intrigued by the responses from first Ace Bailey of like, oh, no, I'm going to Utah. And then even worse, Colin Murray-Boyles getting the profanity caught on live.
Don't read lips, kids. Yeah.
It was like, oh, no, you're going north of the border. Okay, so, you know, I guess overall now we kind of look more towards, I know you're bringing up some of the Cooper Flagg specials,
yeah.
Especially on DraftKings here, and for people just joining us, there are a couple intriguing ones. The one you brought up first, which is the shortest odds on the board, Flag to have 18 or more points and 6 or more rebounds, or at least average that for his upcoming season, plus 285. I think if you're going to do that, Dave, then you probably pair it with either a division title, or then you get really adventurous here. And I know you like the rebounds more than anything.
Yeah.
So I would look towards that 6 or more rebounds per game and the Mavs to win the West, because that's at 40-1. And right now the Mavs just by themselves to win the West is 25-1. So obviously that's correlated play for us right there. If you think that the Mavs would be better and be a postseason team to be reckoned with, then, you know, you would think Cooper Flagg is a big reason why. So, so good specials and plenty of time to look at it, but otherwise very sleepy NBA draft last night.
Yeah, and totally. And again, with Dallas now, it looks like their framework, as you mentioned, 25-1 to win the West. The Lakers by comparison, because that's going to be the comparison with the big Luka trade, right? Lakers right now are the fourth betting choice out West at 9-1. So again, Dallas feels like they're sitting in a pretty good spot. You got to make sure your old guys like Kyrie and AD can stay healthy. That's a big, big question mark there. But now with Cooper Flagg, maybe the trade now, that, not saying that the fix was in to get the number one pick, but now it does. All of those things now are settled, and this is what this looks like ultimately for Nico Harrison and for the Dallas Mavericks. I wanted to get into something else in highlights and headlines here in hour number three in your neck of the woods. And you and I have talked about this leading up to the season for the Cleveland Browns, and you had been talking about there looks like there's a dome coming here for Cleveland. Give us the latest on it, because it looks like it might be full steam ahead.
Yeah, I mean, again, still some reports to be confirmed, but really this is now kind of that turning point, that fork in the road of, okay, this is going to happen. Mm-hmm. And so the Ohio legislature, both the House and the Senate, they have basically gotten to a point where they have revised what is known as the Art Modell Law here in Cleveland, and that was to try and keep a team from moving and keep them in downtown within the city limits. So that now it looks like is going to be revised to allow the team to vacate after the next four seasons are completed. So four more years down by the lake here on the shores of Lake Erie for the Cleveland Browns before they will move into a new domed stadium in Brook Park. And so for the geography for people, Brook Park is about 20 minutes south of downtown Cleveland and in an area, Dave, that is very close to Cleveland Hopkins International Airport is a pretty wide open space here where they can not only build the stadium, but it will be, as we've seen now, like kind of villages or mini towns, if you will, around these arenas, ballparks, and stadiums. So that is a big move here now and kind of a signal that no more mistake by the lake monikers,
right?
Other than when the Broncos come in here and unfortunately play the Browns. So it's a full steam ahead, my friend. It is. And gone will be those dog pound days of 20 degrees, snow flurries, wind. I, for one, will not miss it. We'll be excited to sit in a climate-controlled suite overlooking a 4-12, 4-13 football team.
You know, it's a $600 million project that the state has got the approval for the funding, and what that means is taxpayer dollars, right? Let's call it what it is. I wonder when you see that, and I know you can't speak for all of Cleveland, do you think this is well-received, that if we as the Ohioans are going to be paying for this, that this is a good thing, and yes, we can buck up to $600 million to get out of the freezing cold temperatures? Like, do you think that's something that they're going to look on in 4 years and go, yes, we need to modernize, we need a new stadium, we need a Super Bowl, and it feels like all of those things eventually will come in tow?
Yes, there's going to be your diehards that are like, this is not the same football that we grew up with, and yeah, all right, everything changes. But I think from an economic standpoint, this is obviously where you have some families like, we need to get up with the times here.
Mm.
It's not just about, you know, the 20 dates for football. It's about multiple concerts and Final Fours and national championship games, both in basketball and college football. And I think they took one look at what happened with Detroit and Minnesota, and we're like, we have to do this. Like, we have to do it. And so it makes a lot of sense from an economic standpoint, what it means from a competitive advantage standpoint. You know, how do you build the club now if Andrew Berry is still around and Kevin Stefanski are still around to be able to now tweak it as really the Lions have, just kind of use an easy comp here. It's a track meet, right? It's a team built for to be able to play indoors there, but also have that ground and pound once you eventually have to get outside. So I think that's the other thing to think about here is how does the roster construction of the Browns change knowing what this timeline is now in 4 years to be playing indoors.
I just wonder if the Buffalo Bills are going to be the last of the Mohicans here for team. It just sounds sacrilegious to think of it, but you know, they flirted with it years ago in Toronto, moving the team there. Cleveland staying in Cleveland, people, but it's going to be a dome stadium here. That's coming in 4 years. Spin this forward a little bit to this year and your boots on the ground there in Cleveland. And I'm sure you're inundated with this conversation each and every day. Who's going to be taking snap number one in week number one, right? Shedeur Sanders has had some off-the-field stuff that's been going on with the speeding and over 100 miles an hour and two tickets now and those sort of things. And you go, well, why would that matter? I do wonder if it does matter. If because of some of the off-the-field stuff has already been highlighted for Shedeur, 7-1 to take snap number one. Flacco, the favorite here, plus $1.10. Kenny Pickett came over from the Eagles last year. 2-1. There's the two rookies at Dillon, Gabriel 5-1, and Shedeur at 7-1. It just feels like it puts him further behind the eight ball, Sanders, if you're really trying to make a case that I don't know you can make a good one, that he's going to be the starter week one.
There's a little bit of a groundswell here for the, or at least the rumor that they really want Kenny Pickett to start.
Really?
Again, I don't buy – listen, this is the worst fishbowl when it comes to football talk. I mean, it's frat boy radio left and right.
Right.
No one knows. Everyone's going off speculation. So until we get into camp, Dave, I'm not drawing any conclusions whatsoever. If they want the best chance to win this year, it's Joe Flacco. If they are in this to continue to have a high draft pick for next year and then kind of figure out what they have with Dillon Gabriel and Shedeur Sanders, then yes, you start Kenny Pickett, you allow – those young kids to kind of get the reps. And then ultimately, once they're 0-5, you make that transition. And I think coming back from overseas, Dave, is that first line of demarcation where you could circle it and say, if a quarterback change happens, if the worst happens for them out of the chute, this is probably when, because you need the bulk of the season, right? You need to understand, can these guys, not only with a fair amount of time, but what do we really have? Because of what the quarterback class is going to look like in this upcoming draft, or we assume that's what it looks like, You know, that is what I think they have to consider here from a long-term quarterback decision.
You know, the amazing part, too, is, you know, it's 53-man roster. And I know in my D.C. days of covering those teams how important those game day decisions are. You know, who's not going to be on that active roster? Who is? Are they really going to carry four quarterbacks on this roster? Like, that's the bigger question to me, in that if you're trying to analyze this market, I don't know that all four of these guys are going to even be on the roster, period, let alone the active roster, before you get to actually those game day Sundays, right, Jensen? I think there's a real possibility, and we would think one of the two veterans would be the guy that'd be left looking for work elsewhere.
Yeah, and I think that's why no decisions yet. I don't even want any part of this market. I want to get into camp, and I want to see,
yep,
from a rep standpoint, I want to see when we get into the preseason, what are we doing here? Who we get more, I think, solid indicators from that route than any of this media speculation.
Yep, and again, if you want Joe Flacco to be a coach, make him a coach. I can go back.
Exactly.
To, right? If he's supposed to be a mentor and not playing week one, Kenny Pickett wants to play. He's not ready for mentor status, certainly in his mind at least. So interesting markets there, but know that going in, they're probably not going to carry and keep all four of those guys. If you want to look for a more exciting way to bet, check out xcuta.com. That is spelled X-C-U-T-T-A. It's the future of futures wagering. Combines the adrenaline of a live auction with the strategy of sports betting and fantasy picks. Easy to use. Works for any sport, over 1,000 teams, players, golfers, drivers. XCut is adaptable to any sport, even horse racing. Free to sign up. You're going to pick what you want to bid on, customize your auction, set your winnings, invite your friends, they can play too. XCut has got free auctions every day, 3, 6, 9 p.m. Eastern. Send an email to support@xcuta.com. Mention VSiN. They're going to give you a 3-month player promo code to get you started. Again, that's xcuta.com, X-C-U-T-T-A.
The books right here on VSiN.
We continue VSiN by the books here on this Thursday edition. Just checking out what's going on right now at the Rocket Classic to update that. And right now our rabbit is Andrew Putnam. Didn't see that coming. He's 4 under.
Okay.
Andrew Putnam is setting the pace here at 4 under par through 8 holes. Patrick Cantlay off to a really good start here. We talked about Patrick here to begin the program, 3 under through 6. And right now, let me see if we can get those updated numbers here in the Rocket Classic. And again, very early. Kyle Morikawa is 1 under to begin his round. He's still at 14-1. Cantlay is now the favorite to win this tournament at 9-1. Keegan Bradley got off to that great start. He's still the second betting choice right now at 12-1. So Keegan Bradley is 2 under par through his first 6 holes. I did hop in on Akshay Bhatia before the day here at 55-1 for first round leader. He's at 2 under par, so 2 off the pace there, set by Andrew Putnam and Lee Hodges, somebody Wes Reynolds referenced to us yesterday on Wednesdays with Wes. Lee Hodges off to a really good start. He's 4 under through 7 holes as well. College football is going to be taking center stage here pretty darn soon. So if you want to get in some of those futures wagers, you can. Let's go get the Big 12. This year, and some of the usual suspects, i.e. a K-State, are going to be on that short number here at plus 550 to be your championship game winner. So you got to get to the title game and then ultimately win it to cash this ticket, obviously. Forks Up out there in Tempe is plus 550. Utah, those Utes, plus 650. Guns Up in Lubbock, 650. Baylor Bears, 750. Last of these single digits would be BYU at 8-1, TCU at 9-1. Jensen, Colorado, conspicuous by its absence there with prime time. You don't have the Heisman Trophy winner. You don't have Deion's kid playing quarterback. 22-1. Is this going to be a rough year for prime time in Boulder?
I think so. And again, just one of those situations of how do you reload? And it is a complete facelift, not only from an offensive scheme and weaponry standpoint, but also back in of your defense too. A couple of big names, and of course Shador's brother there too, and no longer there. So as I go through the odds, and again understanding why Kansas State is up there, I do think Avery Johnson is a great little spot here for the Heisman Trophy too. Depending on where you can get him, would love to have him in pocket. I think I have him right around 50-1. Added him a week or so ago. Top 10 defense potential, and just kind of where they are within the conference. Arizona State, you know, knowing that Sam Levitt, Jordan Tyson, strong offensive line. They've got some continuity there. Utah at that number, okay, just slightly behind, not a bad one to have in pocket, but they've lost a significant amount on the defensive side. And then just the schedule in and of itself, they got to go to Kansas State, they got to go to Manhattan, they've got to go to TCU down there at Fort Worth. So again, good value there if they can win a couple of those key road tests. BYU at 8-1. I believe it's the second easiest conference schedule that they have right now. Yep. Houston and Cincinnati, particularly on there. You just look at that win total. That was a number that jumped out to me as an alternative. I guess you could go Baylor at 750, but I think BYU at 8-1 from a long shot, or maybe a dark horse, if you will, just within that conference in of itself. That was a number that jumped out to me.
You know me well enough by now that when I look at certainly college and the NFL, more specifically, even more so in the NFL, I'm looking at coach quarterback in my pairing sheet, if you will, before I make some of these futures wagers. But I'm not playing Colorado at 22-1 to win the division, to win the Big 12, rather. But when I do see their total at 6.5, and you get plus $1.45 to the over, I wonder if this isn't a bad time to look at Colorado now that their numbers are depressed in the betting market. And I was just looking at their schedule. And again, it looks manageable at the beginning, right? You're going to open up with Georgia Tech at home. You're going to take on Delaware. Joe Flacco's not walking through that door. You got to play on the road against H-Town, against Houston. I know that on the road's never easy here. And then you come back for a home game against Wyoming. Jensen, there is a real possibility that if we trust Deion Sanders as a coach and the staff he's put together, and I see you smiling already at that notion, that if we trust primetime, we could be looking at 4-0, baby. And now I just need three more until we get into the rigmarole of the Big 12 schedule.
Sign you up for the nearest car salesman opportunity, buddy. That was pretty good.
That's my Deion sales pitch.
I love the enthusiasm. I just cannot back potentially what the overall talent gap may look like in various matchups, right? And again, if we're putting hard-earned, you know, Benjamins on this thing, allow me better opportunities with more established quarterback head coach to kind of use your ideas there on paper. I think our odds are better served at some of these other clubs, you know, particularly the BYUs of the world. And you know, even if Kansas State, like, again, if you think they win the Big 12, then it, as far as the championship game goes, comparative analysis would tell you that looking into the college football playoff, you know, kind of where just that is in and of itself, we're looking at Kansas State at plus 280 right there. So would you rather them, you know, win the Big 12 at 550? I think that's the better number than to make the college football playoff. Is there a scenario where they don't win that championship game, but they still get in your mind?
And that's the question, right? And I do think there is a pathway for that to happen. I think that the Big 12, maybe if we with the expansion of these super conferences, maybe it's getting a little bit more street cred than it would have in past years. And with the expansion of the playoff in year two, that those pathways could be there. But you at least would have to get to the title game for that scenario to exist, right? And then theoretically you lose the title game, but you've done enough body of work here that you still get in as an at-large, if you will. So under that scenario, I think I'd rather play, you hate playing the shorter number at plus 550 here, you know, one of the short shots here with Arizona State, but you would have a hedgeable spot, right? That if they at least get to that conference title game, not knowing whether or not they win or lose, could they still get an at-large into the college football playoff, you might be able to buy yourself you know, maybe if they're a dog, you can even find a nice middle instead of a pure hedge. That might not be a bad way to market this thing. But you're right. When you look at K-State and you look at the quarterback and coach scenario, you would trust K-State at that number, I think, at plus 550. What do you make of Arizona State being right there with them at plus 550? Do you see that in Tempe? That, yeah, they should be ahead of Utah and or BYU at that 8-1 number? Because I know BYU is getting a lot of talk here early.
Yeah, again, as I said, when you look at just the offensive returners here, and I mentioned Levitt at quarterback, Tyson there as receiver, I really love that they still had the strong offensive line. If you're going to kind of, you know, swing it with the big boys here,
right.
I think they match Kansas State pretty well, you know, on paper there. Key factor for them, and they played a lot of close games last year. I know our esteemed producer and fellow Forks Up man, Brandon Valesky, will know this. What, 6-1, I believe, in one score games last year? Now, you know, they did have Scadabo there to, you know, be able to help and control the line of scrimmage in some of those spots. So how do you replace him? And not only just his individual production, but the way that defense is game planned for Arizona State's offense overall. So, hey, you know, if you win the Baylors, the TCUs, the Utahs, if you do that, God, you set yourself up in such an advantageous spot. But those close games, pretty much all of them went the way of the Sun Devils. Can they have that same ability to win those close games here in 2025?
I'll just say this. I'm not betting it, people. I'm just throwing it out there for conversation's sake. Colorado's 300-1 to win the national championship.
Jeez, God.
But Jensen, no thanks. You know, but my thing is, though, I do think it's in being perfectly serious here. We will learn a lot about Deion this year for the pure coaching chops, right?
Yeah.
Because the elite talent that, and I know Shador didn't go, and we thought he was going to go much higher in the draft, but Travis Hunter still top five pick, right? So you did have legit top end NFL talent on that roster last year. So with being devoid of those two in particular, if this is a 7-win team, and they hit that over at plus $1.45, do we then look at Deion in a different light and go, it's not a gimmick. It's not a recruiting sales pitch to come play for Coach Prime. He can actually coach. Would we readjust our thinking if that happens?
It's entirely possible. I just don't see the path. And again, I would love to see chaos. So I think we all would, but I don't know if I hitch my wagon to Colorado as the chaos team. If I were looking at a chaos candidate,
yeah,
you know, is it an Iowa State at 13-1? Is it a TCU at 9-1? I think those are, yeah, you know, and obviously from an odd standpoint, shorter. But I think that makes more sense of teams that could potentially shoot the moon here and find a viable path.
I think we just have a segment that was just born: chaos candidate. I love that idea for teams in certain conferences out there. Colorado might be mine. By the way, 175, that's the early bird special right now. VSiN.com/subscribe. That betting guide's coming out July 1st, people. Do not wait on it. $175 covers you all the way through the Super Bowl. Reed Kuhn, UFC 317.
You're tuned in to VSiN by the Books right here on VSiN.
We are back, VSiN by the Books, Dave Ross and Jensen Lewis here on this Thursday edition. Always love catching up with Reed Kuhn to break down big-time fight cards. They don't come a whole lot bigger than UFC 317. It is deep. We got two title bouts here in the flyweight division and, of course, the lightweight division. Give Reed a follow, as I do, at Fightnomics. The author of a book of the same name joins us now here in the Progressive Guest Line. Reed, before we get all into the numbers, I always ask you this. You know this. Saturday, this is as good a fight card as you're going to get for the year. Do you then bring out the heavy artillery from the kitchen and a wine pairing? Are we going bourbon? How do you start to game plan that map for Saturday night?
Yeah, first I have to pray that none of my dinner guests are vegetarian, because that just really derails the entire strategy for the night. But absolutely, there's going to be some good wine, and the bourbon comes out only if we win.
Ooh.
So, and as you can see, I've had to replace almost an entire shelf up there, because I've had guests here when we've had a great night and they are required to partake in the top shelf. So That's the rule. Got to live by it. Follow traditions.
I tell you this. They say that the Masters is a tradition unlike any other. That is a tradition unlike any other right there. Jensen and I have been talking about it all week. We're going to keep talking about it until we get to Saturday. Of course, the main event here with Ilya Topuria moving up in weight. And I know when you model this, Reed, how do you attack that? Because I know it, sometimes it's going to discount it, but you have so much data on Ilya at 45. How does that change at 55 against the former champ in DuBronx?
Yeah, the simple answer is that it doesn't change my strategy. I am excluding weight class into the prediction itself. Things like betting odds are predictive. That's in there, as is historical performance. At this level, I got to hope that the sample size is large enough that I'm getting a clean look at both guys, but I'm not factoring in the size difference. And so that is a little bit of a concern because I do see a really strong win probability for Topuria. And then just going down the numbers, his striking is a massive threat and he's got decent takedown defense. I don't think Oliveira, for as good as his submission game is, he's not the best takedown wrestler. And so I think that's an uphill battle for him. Yeah, he's going to look huge or at least much more rangy, but that doesn't mean Topuria hasn't closed the distance on rangier guys before. I mean, Volkanovski's a rangy guy for striking and he put him away. So Topuria, I think he has the tools for a knockdown, for a knockout. He does have to avoid those scrambles. He needs to stay off the fence, not let Oliveira get too close, and then just let those hands loose.
All right, Reed, I'm going to give you a bourbon comparison here. If you give me the main card, who is the Weller foolproof for you in these potential strong leans that you have here for UFC 317?
So shockingly, normally you hear me go chalk on this because, you know, finding reliable favorites is the best way to go. My dark horse here is Kai Kara France.
Ooh.
I see a lot of ingredients here to justify an upset. So even if I think it's more of a coin flip at plus 200, there's a lot of edge there. And so that's the way I'm looking at this fight. I give him the tiniest lean, just over 50%. Normally don't see that. Sometimes I'll bet a dog, even though their win probability is below 50%, because the edge is there. In this case, it's, you know, we'll see where the final probability lands on Friday, but I see him as having a slight edge over Pantoja, and the ingredients are there. So like I had to look at the stats and figure out why do I really think that? And that's because he hits twice as hard. He has twice the knockdowns. He's much younger. He's rangier. And Pantoja has a huge liability in head strike defense. He just gets hit a lot. And you can't do that against someone who's going to unleash a lot of power and is way more powerful. So if these guys stand and trade, Kai Kara France is probably going to do the more damage. Now, however, what if Pantoja just tries to wrestle? Kai Kara France, 88% takedown defense. Very good. He's faced 50 takedowns. So this wouldn't be the first time he knows an opponent is just going to try to take him down. So I see some great ingredients here. I think that's going to be a secretly very fun fight to watch. And I'm going on the dog.
I will say this for people who might have forgotten. They did face off against each other back in the old days of the Ultimate Fighter. And in that two-round bout that Pantoja got his hand raised, Reed, I'm sure you remember, Kai Kara France did stuff those takedowns towards the end of that fight. So you saw what Pantoja was trying to do. I know it's many moons ago, but he was not really successful in those takedowns against Kai Kara. So if the fight stays standing, you could certainly have a live dog there. I'm on the raw dog. I love when our numbers align here. What did you see from Brandon Royval that became a play for you against Joshua Van? Love Joshua Van, but again, now he's a $1.18 betting favorite over the raw dog. That surprised me.
Yeah, so the odds have flipped on that one. And so I'm in a situation where I probably had a higher win probability for Royval earlier in the week when the market also thought he was a favorite because it kind of drags my win probability one way or the other. It's flipped. I still see action on Royval. So again, I have a situation where I see his win probability above 50%. And then if market's going to give me 100 on him or even money, then I see value there. That's, you know, a 7-point edge. So, you know, that I was trying to look at what do I think? I just think this is a big step up for Josh.
Yes.
Now he fought so recently ago and he looked great, but it's not like he wasn't hit in that fight. I mean, that's a kind of a risky thing to do is to come back that quickly after a weight cut, after getting hit in the head and turn it around so quickly. And Royval is a big step up. And so that's the out of the cage factor, I think, that makes this a little trickier. And the fact that it flipped, I think, works in my favor, because I was worried about overcommitting on Royval, given that Josh Van fought so recently and I don't have the latest fight of data. But yeah, I think, first of all, barn burner. This will be a barn burner. These guys both average abnormally high strike rates per minute. And yeah, Van is very accurate, but you know, this is a step up. Royval's pretty accurate as well. He has the knockdowns. And I don't see much of a ground game between these two. So I think this will be a fun trading leather type fight and maybe a close decision, but I still lean Royval.
Yeah, and Reed, one of your other stronger leans, I know, is Moicano in this matchup too. Is there just a difference kind of in the handicap where what's your line of demarcation between your stronger lean and a weaker lean? Is it just similar style or the stylistic matchup? Is it the recent form? How do you make that distinction now with Moicano?
Well, the distinction really mathematically is just how big a difference, like how much do I disagree with the market? The more I disagree, that's a stronger lean because I'm just going to play that bigger if you're following kind of the Kelly betting criteria. So mm-hmm. bigger play when you see a bigger edge. In this case, this is one of those fights. Every now and then there's a fight on here where I'm kind of surprised that the models have such a strong opinion. And that's this fight for me. I tweeted that Uber tail of the tape last night, because this one stuck out as the trickiest one of the batch. I am not surprised that the odds are like really close and flipping back and forth. Who knows who's going to be the favorite? Dariush is a guy that I've backed many, many times. I do wonder if his statistics over the last few years have been a little worse than they were prior to that. And Moicano, kind of just a grinder mentality, somehow gets it done. And I can't figure it out. Both guys do rely on wrestling. They both have great ground control. Dariush probably a little bit better on that front. But yeah, I just think Moicano has a good chance here. And if you're going to give me even money on it for a greater than 50% win probability, again, I'm going to take that edge. But I do see this one as tricky. And I will note one thing that leapt off the page here, 10 combined knockdowns received between these two guys. Normally we're looking at like who has more power. Dariush arguably has more power because he's scored more knockdowns. He's also been dropped 6 times. Moicano dropped 4 times. They're both 36. They're actually born 2 weeks apart. I don't know who's less damaged. That's another trick here. If they both go toe-to-toe, who's going to be able to absorb more? Because both these guys are getting towards the end there where one of the chins might go.
And we saw that with Charles Oliveira when he's able to get Benil out, really hurt on the hands before finishing him there on the ground as well. Some of the maybe a smaller play, but still some leans here very quickly, Reed. And one of those fights that I do think is intriguing is Jack the Joker Hermanson against RoboCop and Gregory Rodriguez. Rodriguez looked like he was on a championship track and then last time got derailed in those efforts. Does he rebound in your eyes against the Joker?
Yeah, I do think so. I think the price has gotten a little too high for me to make a big play on this, but you know, maybe taking a prop angle, Rodriguez by TKO, or just an under, you know, fight does not go the distance because Hermanson, that's the wild card that he has. The Joker, he will find those submissions out of nowhere, but he'll take a beating on the way in. So he's 0-3 on knockdown ratio. He's never knocked someone down. He's been dropped 3 times. His striking metrics are not particularly good offensively and even defensively. Rodriguez will definitely have an advantage with the hands. And then I look at the takedown defense. Rodriguez actually has 89% takedown defense. That's very good. But the sample size there is a little suspect. He's only faced 9 takedowns, which means he's, you know, he's defended 8 out of 9. That's great. But is that enough against Hermanson, who might be chaining them together, trying to get them on the fence? So I think if Rodriguez stays in open water, his hands absolutely do some damage here.
And I see that your model also leans towards Tracy Cortez. She's over almost a 250 betting favorite here against Viviana Araújo. Cannot wait to see what the menu looks like, Reed, when you post it on X. So everybody give him a follow at Fightnomics. Appreciate it, Reed. Safe travels. We'll catch up again soon.
Thanks a lot, guys.
There he is, Reed Kuhn in Washington, D.C. We're back with our best bets next here. VSiN by the Books.
You're tuned in to VSiN by the Books right here on VSiN.
We are back. VSiN by the Books. Always love those conversations with Reed Kuhn in advance of UFC 317 coming up on Saturday night. And again, just for tomorrow's show, going to have Zayd Hussain is going to be in town from Chicago. He's in town, obviously, for the fights. He'll be here, and, of course, Lou Finocchiaro. So before you make those UFC 317 wagers, we've got great coverage all week leading up to it. I would make the case, Jensen, not their Super Bowl per se, but as good a fight weekend here in Las Vegas for International Fight Week. You get the Hall of Fame inductions going on in the next couple of nights. And then, of course, Saturday night at T-Mobile. It's as good as it gets, and that card is so deep coming up. So we'll give out our official plays here. But I think you guys all know, if you've been watching all week, certainly leaning towards the raw dog, Brandon Royval, at plus money, while you can still get that here at Circa. But let's get to our best bets presented to us by GBank, the official bank of VSiN. And you fired on a couple of games, but did you also fire on a couple of purchases of bottles of wine while we were in the break?
Yeah. We may have to secure a sponsorship for this place that I ordered from.
Was it because we were talking with Reed with the food pairings? And you're like, man, I got to fire away on some of this stuff.
It's amazing how our devices listen to us. I get an email from this place that I buy from. I'm like, you know what?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I need to. I mean, Dave, you know, when you find deals,
you gotta go.
That you can't pass up.
That's it.
It's the same way when I look at the WNBA, you know, a day ahead, I'm like, this is a deal I can't pass up.
I cannot wait till tomorrow.
Yeah, exactly.
So let's get to a couple of those plays. And again, VSiN Pro subscribers have already had access to it. If you're listening here on Sirius Channel 158, we appreciate that as well. You're going to get them right now. What do you have in pocket tonight?
All right, so from yesterday, gave out the Mystics and the Aces under 163.5. That's down to 162 as I look at it right now. So a nice little a line move in our favor, and we do appreciate already that. By the way, both the early picks we gave out yesterday and the previous day's show, both those cashed as well. Woo. So we love that. Remember, I told you I would jump on the Dallas Wings plus 7.5 against the Fever.
Yep.
And you got a back-to-back spot here for Indiana. Again, they're home tonight against the Sparks, but they're going to jump out on the road into Dallas tomorrow. Our plus 7.5, Dave, sitting very pretty right now. Wings down to plus 6.5. Mm. And so we are in a good spot there. For today, I do like the Sparks Fever game over. And again, sometimes you just look at data that makes a lot of sense. And this one, we got over 173 earlier. It is already up to 174. So if your VSiN Pro subscriber already pays off, you've already got a point in our favor. It's still at 172.5. Here at Circa. So if you want to jump on that, go right ahead. You get the better of the number, but already up from 173 to 174 on DraftKings. So again, as much as the Fever have had inconsistency with their offense and Caitlin Clark in particular, sometimes you look at two teams that are just going to go up and down. They're going to keep chucking shots. Volume will be there. That'll be the case tonight. So do like a lot of points. And hopefully this one cashes as well as a rocking chair winner.
All right, before we get into the baseball card here, let's just update very quickly the Rocket Classic. We've been keeping an eye on that. Right now we have a four-way lead at the top at 4 under par. Victor Perez, the Frenchman, Andrew Putnam, Minwoo Lee, the Aussie, and Lee Hodges, somebody that Wes Reynolds talked about yesterday. All four of those players currently at 4 under par. Kyle Morikawa is still the live betting favorite here at 10-1, but in kind of an indifferent start, a decent start, tied for 27th at 1 under par. That kind of surprises me, though, that he's still the shortest number on the board there at 1 under. And somebody else in that Ryder Cup conversation that we talk about a lot, certainly Patrick Cantlay, off to a really good start. He's the second betting choice right now as well. He's 3 under par, and the Captain America Jensen, he's doing it again. 3 under. Wow. Through seven, Keegan Bradley just 1 off the lead. So his play is indicating that the captain, oh my captain, is going to have to select himself if he doesn't make it on points outright. But I got to think, if he goes on to win this week in Detroit, coming off a win last week, not saying that's going to happen. It's very hard to do on tour, even for Scottie Scheffler. End of discussion. We know where Keegs is going to be in September. He's going to be on the Ryder Cup team at Bethpage Black. Major League Baseball, you do have a couple plays. I know one of them, the Phillies just cannot seem to score in H-Town, Jensen. Are you going back there today and kind of fade those offenses?
Yeah, I think so. And again, we get a great pitching matchup yet again here today. Christopher Sanchez going for the Phillies. Left-handers had a spectacular season. And then Hunter Brown, and we talked with Mike Palm earlier. If you are a subscriber to our betting guide for baseball, Adam Burke had him pegged at 25-1 to win the American League Cy Young. He's down all the way to 8-1 as he enters the start today. So yeah, under seven is what I gave out at $1.06. It's now up to, I believe, $1.13. No, it's $1.19 now on DraftKings. So already better of the price is Circa right there giving you the under seven at $1.15. And listen, you know, sometimes you just don't get in the way here of an offense that has sputtered.
Yep.
In you know, so many respects. Opportunities too late yesterday. Dave was watching the end to get our Zach Wheeler seven or more strikeouts over the line from Whiff Wednesday. Plenty of opportunities with runners in scoring position here for the Phillies. They cannot get the big hit. They have really struggled against the back end of Houston's bullpen too. So if I remember correct, it's either 16 or 17 consecutive scoreless innings now. Wow. For the Philly offense. And usually when this happens, Dave, you come up yet against another tough starting pitcher and maybe the best one going right now in the Astros, Hunter Brown.
Wyatt Tomczyk just walked in, does a great job here behind the glass here at VSiN. And he actually gave me a little tip of the cap for what my Mets were able to do to his Braves yesterday. We finally got off the schneid and got a win against the ATL. Grant Holmes going to be on the bump here for Atlanta, going up against Griffin Canning. Maybe a little bit a regression here for Griffin Canning. Last couple times out, right now the Mets are small favorites, $1.15. Come back here in the Braves, $1.05. Total sitting at 8.5. Can my Metropolitans make it two in a row over Wyatt's Braves?
We'll see. By the way, Juan Soto, reports of his demise greatly over-exaggerated. Dave, if I were to tell you, last year through 80 games with the New York Yankees, Juan Soto had 19 home runs.
Mm.
Because June has really been just a jolt, not only for Juan Soto, but hopefully now for the rest of the Mets overall. Juan Soto, through his first 80 games with the New York Mets, 19 home runs. So here we go. It is really, and again, 10 homers in the month.
Sure.
That's obviously going to help. But yeah, overall, not only important for the player, but I think more importantly for the psyche for this group, as you saw, just that losing streak where it didn't feel like anything could go right for them. Maybe this is the turning point for the Mets to get back on the good foot.
I just want to get your thoughts, because you were talking about the Phillies and why that's an underplay for you. Today, I'm looking at the Royals. Michael Lorenzen is going to be on the bump against Shane Boz of the Rays. We know what a good run the Rays are on. But I see the total at 10, and I go, well, unless Tampa Bay scores 9 of those, I'm wondering, like, could you even make a case for an over if Kansas City's not going to be a willing participant in helping get there?
Buddy, you went right to where I was going. I'm kind of interested to see where some more money. I may lock this in later today.
Right?
Just to see it, but you're right. You are looking at the exact right direction here. Talk about how Philly has struggled. Kansas City can't hit water falling out of the boat right now either. And guess what? As we always say, you come up against another really tough customer in Shane Boz here for Tampa Bay. I do think Lorenzen can do enough to kind of limit the Rays, but you're right. I mean, this feels like unless Kansas City scores 3, this would have to be Tampa Bay doing all the heavy lifting, no question about it.
I see 10 and I go, what am I missing there? So again, maybe that suspicious line, but I'm with you. My first blush there is to look to that under in Kansas City. Fountains up have been turned off offensively, that's for sure. We got a $500 trifecta right now from GBank, First Bet, and VEASAN. All you got to do is open up a GBank Visa Signature credit card in the first 90 days, deposit, and play through $1,000 at First Bet to trigger that $500 trifecta. You're going to get $200 in cashback rewards on your GBank Visa Signature credit card. First Bet will give you a $100 deposit match. VEASAN will then complete the trifecta with a free VEASAN Pro subscription through October 31st. That, in and of itself, is a $200 value. That is the $500 trifecta from GBank, First Bet, and VEASAN. Head over to VEASAN.com/GBank. That's VSIN Gbank. This is a one-time promotion limited to customers opening up a new account in response to this very offer. It will not apply to requests to convert existing accounts. Apply today. Terms and conditions do apply. So, Jensen, we got one more day until the weekend here. Again, a lot of UFC 317 talk tomorrow. Have you been looking into those? I know we've been looking. Have you made any college football futures plays yet? Or are we going to save that for a rainy day?
Yes, I have. John Mateer and Avery Johnson in the Heisman race also took Oklahoma at 80-1 to win the national title. Just get in, boys and girls, and let's see what the Boomer Sooner can do.
What are the teachers used to tell us? There's no such thing as a dumb question. That was a dumb question. Of course you've got stuff already fired, Jensen. That's why you're Jensen Lewis. Great stuff as always. The numbers game coming up next with Gil Alexander and Kelly Pittman.